We're going to do the DC update, and this is something that's broadcast here in the lounge, and we also rebroadcast it on K-Hum. And it gets also posted to our news blog, the Lost Coast Outpost. Now, this will come as a huge surprise to you, so I want you to be prepared for this. Occasionally, when it's posted to the Lost Coast Outpost, there are negative comments.
Yes, I have stopped reading those comments. It gets a little rough in there.
Yeah. You know, and then you can imagine what some of them are like. But some of them are directed towards me, and they mostly go along the lines of, oh, more softball questions from the liberal media.
Oh, well, why don't you fling some fastballs at me then?
Well, I was going to do that.
Yeah.
But then when I thought, I'm going to turn it over to the listeners. So I posted something on Facebook saying, if you have questions for Congressman Huffman, let me know, and I will ask them.
Yeah.
So we're doing a special all-listener version of the DC update.
Awesome.
The first one is, what are the chances of getting a DACA deal through the House?
Through the House? Because that's a very specific question. Okay.
That's
you want me to speak to that now?
If you would be
you
so
bet.
Kind.
Yeah. So this is something that actually House Republicans, a growing number of House Republicans are starting to push for. Because they know that this is a rough political climate for them facing re-election this fall. Their constituents in many of their districts want them to protect the Dreamers. And so I've been actually pleased to see a number of my Republican colleagues in the House coming together, signing on to letters, signing on to the new development is that they're pushing, this is kind of a parliamentary technical narrative here, but they're pushing a rule which you have to pass in order to bring a bill to the floor. This rule is, we refer to it as the Queen of the Hill, which means multiple bills would come up for a vote. The one that gets the most makes it out of the House. And this would allow the DREAM Act, which I support, to have its moment and have its vote. It would allow some lesser compromises to also be heard. And then it would even allow the Freedom Caucus and the anti-immigration folks to put their own bill forward. I'd like to see everybody get on record. I think that would be great. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we actually could pass something good for the Dreamers out of the House. Now, the key is going to be Speaker Ryan and whether he gives his blessing for this to proceed. And so it's just a matter of politics. I'm sorry to be so cynical about it, but he's going to look at the lay of the land and assess, is it better for his members or worse for his members to have them on record voting on this issue? Some of them, it's about political survival, because this is a Democratic year with a Democratic wave. They feel like they need to do something or they're going to lose their jobs. But they're also, from the right, countervailing pressures. So, you know, we're all going to be watching Speaker Ryan very closely on this.
All right. Thank you. Next question is, you recently endorsed Ryan Sundberg in his supervisorial reelection campaign. And what led you to make that endorsement?
Well, local endorsements are kind of a viper's nest politically. In a perfect world, I would probably stay totally out of them because rarely is there an upside. Often, I upset people with these local endorsements. Here's the bottom line for why I choose sometimes to do that. I work with certain local officials on issues that, in my job, are really important to the district. So, for example, with Ryan Sundberg, he's probably the supervisor I work most closely with on things like last chance grade, on Klamath River Dam removal, on the Trinity River, on Native American issues. That's a big part of the portfolio that I work on for this region. And he's been really accessible and engaged and a good working partner for me. I get that his politics, aren't perfect for everybody locally, that there's some controversy around that. I'm not sure even what party he belongs to. But that working relationship is important to me as your congressman, and Ryan has been a good partner. So I think he's probably going to win. I think he's going to continue to be in this job, and having that good relationship actually matters, and so that's why I endorsed him.
Then the next question that came through was, I'll just read it as it came to me. Eel River Dams, how do you feel about removal and restoral of the watershed?
Yeah, so I think this is probably referring to the Potter Valley Project relicensing process that's underway right now. And everybody knows that for the last 100 years or so, some water in the Eel River has been diverted through a hydro project into Mendocino and Sonoma counties. as part of that. That project's up for relicensing. Only happens every generation or so. So this is a big deal. And it's also a big deal because PG&E is taking a fresh look at this project and whether it even wants to continue it as a hydro project. So I think we have an opportunity here to do something good for both watersheds. And I'm trying to facilitate a stakeholder group that explores what I'm referring to as a two-basin solution. Can we do good things that are improvements on the Eel River side, while also acknowledging that you're probably not going to just cut off the water to communities that have been relying on it for the last 100 years in Mendocino and Sonoma County? A total shutoff of that water is not going to work. So what kind of win-win scenarios can you have there? There's a dam on the Russian River side of that system near Ukiah, the Coyote Valley Dam, that could be raised so that you could more opportunistically capture water in times of big flows when it's not needed necessarily, leaving more water to go down the Eel River. It might even let you modify some of those structures, maybe take out a dam or two. There are two dams, one smaller one that's kind of a management dam, then the Scott Dam is the big one. But if we look at it through that perspective of trying to take care of the needs in both basins, I think there are a lot of great possibilities. And I am overseeing a stakeholder process to try to talk through those possibilities.
And now moving on to another environmental issue. This question came in earlier today. How can we protect California environmental standards? Is there a way to encourage California businesses to continue lowering emissions / effluent in spite of the destruction of federal standards? And a related question, can California win the federal versus state environmental lawsuits?
Yeah, that's a great and timely question, especially with these vehicle emission standards coming into play this week. So the key is going to be how far Scott Pruitt and this Trump EPA decides to push what we call the clean car waiver that California and a dozen other states have had for a couple of decades now. I think if states want to set higher environmental standards generally, that's federalism. We ought to let them do that. But you have folks in the industry that would rather have one lesser standard nationwide, and they apparently have the ear of Scott Pruitt. So we're going to find out. We know that he's going to repeal the federal emission standard that was going to go into effect that would take us up into the 50s miles per gallon.
The CAFE?
Yep. But he hasn't specifically said what he's going to do about the clean car waiver for California and the 12 other states. So if he tries to get rid of that, we're going to court. California's going to take him to court, and I think we're going to prevail because his decision will have to have been made based on sound science and, you know, all the baseline information that, frankly, is a good story for these standards. They've been really successful. The industry was on course to actually meet these standards before he decided to roll them back. So I think he's got some explaining to do when the legal challenge comes around. Hopefully he'll let California and these other states continue to have the waiver, though. And if that's the case, the industry's going to have to keep making these clean cars, because you're talking about something like 40% of the cars in America go to these clean car states. So in a way, we can leverage the entire country's clean air and efficiency in the whole world. So that's California leadership, in my opinion. It's a good thing. And the auto industry has always been a reluctant participant in these standards. Yeah, look, these are the folks that told you they couldn't do seatbelts, you know. So the track record on setting these standards, both on safety and efficiency, is incredibly successful. It has worked. It has brought better choices to consumers, better safety, cleaner air. It's brought innovation that actually breathed life back into the car industry. So why we would choose to try to go back in time is kind of baffling.
And the last question that we have time for is simply stated, probably more difficult to answer. What's your reaction to the Stephon Clark shooting in Sacramento?
That's very disturbing. And unfortunately, one of many disturbing incidents like that. I support a federal Justice Department that vigorously steps in as a backstop in these situations and applies our civil rights laws and holds police officers accountable for their use of force in these situations. I don't think Attorney General Jeff Sessions is going to probably do that the way I would want him to. But I'm upset and I'm outraged. And as I look around the country at all these various cases where we have video footage that seems to depict obvious abuse of force, if not murder, there's not the kind of accountability that we need to have. And it doesn't mean you're anti-police. It means that we have to restore the trust between people and police. And if these incidents don't bring accountability, that trust is going to be fractured. When you have these sort of summary death sentences in the field, if there's some policy that's making that happen, we better take a hard look at that policy. And that's what the Justice Department would do if it were functioning and, you know, looking at this issue correctly.
Okay. All right. Congressman Jared Huffman, thank you. Thank you for your time. And thanks for being such a sport for letting me throw you right on the air like that.
It's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
I truly appreciate it.
I'll look for the horrific comments online in the Lost Coast Outpost.
They'll be coming. I can promise you that. And thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Those were awesome questions, and I appreciate it very much.